Several more days passed without incident. They traveled by day, since they were off the main roads and needed light to see where they were going. Also, they were moving through country where none of them had been before, so they didn't know the terrain. Sometimes they found their way blocked by a ravine or a ridge the wagons couldn't handle, and were forced to backtrack until they found another route. They were making progress southward, and that was encouraging to Luke. He didn't know how long it would take them to reach Georgia. A couple of weeks, more than likely, he thought. But at least they were heading in the right direction, finally. He just hoped the Confederacy hadn't collapsed by the time they got there. In a way, that would be simpler, he mused as he rode ahead of the wagons, scouting with Remy. If the damned war was over, they could just surrender and be done with it. Admitting defeat to the Yankees would be a bitter pill to swallow, but at least they would all be alive. Of course, in that case, the Union would seize the gold. Off it would go to Washington. That bothered Luke, too, but the final fate of the gold was really none of his business. He suspected Potter, Stratton, Richards, and Casey were all sneaking drinks now and then, but none of them got drunk, so he didn't say anything about it. Lancaster seemed oblivious to what was going on, but that was nothing unusual. The Colonel was oblivious about a lot of things. The bad feelings he had about the mission grew stronger as they continued heading south. More than a week had passed since they left Richmond when they paused to rest the horses one afternoon and suddenly heard something they hadn't heard in quite a while.
Oh, you hear that, fellers? There's women folks somewhere close by.
Luke heard it all right. Several women by the sound of it. The voices were coming from the other side of a thick stand of trees.
We better check that out, Colonel.
Yeah, there's no telling but what they might be spying on us.
All right. Three of you, go find out who they are and what they're doing here. Jensen, Casey, and Potter, you go.
Luke would have rather gone with a couple of his friends, but he nodded and got his rifle from the wagon. He and Casey and Potter slipped into the woods. The stand of trees wasn't very thick. A couple minutes later, the three men came to a creek. A covered wagon was parked on the other side of the stream. A woman perched on the seat with a shotgun across her knees.
Holy Moses!
Casey was looking at six women standing knee-deep in the creek, stripped down to their underthings. They were taking advantage of the creek and the warm afternoon to bathe. The flimsy garments were soaked and clung to their bodies.
You know what kind of women those are?
Luke knew. It was pretty obvious. They ranged in age from late teens to early 30s, he judged, although soiled doves led such hard lives they often looked older than they really were. Such women always followed the armies. Union, Confederate, it didn't matter. Luke figured such women could have been found with the Greeks outside the walls of Troy.
Must be Yankees around here. Otherwise those women wouldn't be here.
I don't care about that. I just want to go say hi to them.
I want to do a hell lot more than say howdy.
We'd better leave them alone. We'd just be asking for trouble if we start bothering with them.
You're not in charge here, Jensen.
No, but the Colonel wouldn't want...
The hell with the Colonel! Come on, Ted.
Before Luke could stop him, Potter straightened and stepped out of the trees.
Well, howdy there, lady!
The older woman on the wagon seat instantly swung up her shotgun and pointed it across the stream.
Howdy yourself, you damn rebel! You come a step closer and I'll blast you to hell.
Whoa there, ma'am. I don't mean any harm. I just came along and saw all these beautiful young fillies, and I had to say hello. My friend here feels the same way.
That's right.
Still undercover, Luke saw what was about to happen.
Casey, no!
Casey's hand came up with a gun in it. The woman swayed forward, dropped the shotgun, and pitched off the wagon seat, landing on the creek bank in a limp sprawl.
Shut up! Nobody's gonna hurt you!
Why the hell did you shoot the old woman? I don't like people pointing guns at me. Anyway, you heard her call me a rebel? She was a Yankee madam, nothing to be worried about.
Even though Luke had seen far, far more than his share of violence over the past 4 years, the callous way Casey had murdered the woman sickened him. He was about to draw his own gun and cold cock the varmint from behind when footsteps rushed through the trees toward them. He looked over his shoulder and saw Remy and the other men coming to see what the commotion was about.
Hold your fire! Damn it, what's going on here?
As they emerged from the trees, the men all gaped at the women in the creek, who were now huddled together in frightened silence. Even Lancaster stared at them.
That old biddy over yonder by the wagon tried to blast us with a shotgun, Colonel. I stopped her.
I heard the shot. So did any Yankee within a mile of here. Come on. We gotta get moving while we still have the chance.
No offense, Colonel, but I'm not going anywhere until I've had a chance to get to know one of these gals a mite better. That one with the yellow hair, I'm thinking.
Luke saw how things were shaping up. Stratton and Richards had drifted toward Casey and Potter. Remy, Dale, and Edgar had moved up alongside Luke. Lancaster was in the middle. The Colonel realized it wasn't a very good place to be and stepped back quickly.
I've given you men an order. By God, I expect you to carry it out.
They were standing on the knife edge of bad trouble, Luke sensed. He had felt such impending violence in the air many times, and seldom did it end well. However, something intervened. From the corner of his eye, he saw one of the soiled doves break away from the others. The blonde, Casey had mentioned, in fact. She scrambled out of the creek onto the bank and snatched up the shotgun the older woman had dropped. With their attention focused on each other, none of the other men saw it happening until it was too late. Potter finally noticed the blonde and twisted toward her, his hand clawing for the gun at his waist. Luke's revolver came out with blinding speed. He leveled the barrel at Potter and drew back the hammer.
Don't do it!
Get out of here, damn you! I'll cut you all down! I ought to do it anyway for killing Maddie!
Potter's gun was in his hand, already cocked, but it was still pointed at the ground.
You're taking the side of a bunch of damn whores over your friends?
I don't recall you and me being friends, Potter. We just have the same job to do, that's all.
And that job's in danger the longer we stay here. We have to go, now!
For a second, Luke thought Potter was going to lift his gun and pull the trigger anyway. If he did, the creek bank would erupt in gunfire. They might all die, especially if the blonde cut loose at the men with that shotgun. She very well might do just that, considering the other whores had scrambled out of the creek and taken shelter behind their wagon.
Well, I'll never figure you out, Jensen, but I reckon you and the Colonel are all right. There might be a Yankee patrol galloping toward us right now, so we better light a shuck.
But why, Lee?
I said we're going.
Casey cast a regretful glance at the blonde. Clearly, he might have dared that shotgun to get at her, but too much else was against him at the moment. He nodded.
Yeah. Come on, fellas. I'll see you again one of these days, darling.
You better hope I don't see you first.
Luke didn't put his gun away until the men had gone back to the wagons. He saw Potter glancing at him several times as they got ready to move. It was hard to read the man's expression, but Luke knew he had made an enemy. The outriders mounted up, and the drivers and guards climbed onto the wagons. With no Yankees in sight, they moved out smartly, still heading south. Remy brought his horse alongside the wagon where Luke and Dale were riding.
You know, the next time those girls see Yankee soldiers, they're gonna tell them about us.
I expect you're right.
That blonde belle, she'd be a smart one, Luke. She heard Casey and Potter call the colonel by his rank, and she heard him giving us orders. She'll figure out that civilian clothes are not we soldiers. Confederate soldiers.
Luke knew Remy was right. And because of what had happened at that creek, he knew their mission had just gotten harder. The rest of that day, everyone in the group kept looking behind them fairly often, checking their back trail. The same thought was in their minds. One time they'd look back and see Yankee cavalry chasing them. It didn't happen, though. By the time they camped that night, they hadn't encountered anyone else. The next day passed without incident as well, and Luke began to hope if the whores had told somebody about what had happened, the Yankees were too busy to worry about some strange-acting Confederate soldiers dressed in civilian clothing. They were somewhere in eastern Tennessee, Luke figured. Maybe in the Smoky Mountains, and the terrain grew more rugged. The wagons followed narrow, twisting trails running between steep, heavily wooded slopes. Luke watched those mountainsides intently, knowing the dark valleys were perfect for an ambush. The travelers avoided settlements, but every now and then they passed isolated cabins with small garden patches nearby. The people living there barely subsisted on what little food they could grow, along with any small game they could trap. Obviously, it wasn't much. The people who came out of those rickety cabins to watch them pass were gaunt and hollow-eyed. They looked like it had been months since their bellies were even half full. The children were the worst. His heart went out to them as they stared up at the wagons and riders with dull, defeated eyes. He wanted to give them something to eat, but he and his companions were already on short rations. His own belly spent a lot of time growling in hunger. The soldiers couldn't do any hunting because of the attention the shots might attract. They were approaching one such cabin when an old man with a long white beard limped onto the trail to stop them.
Get out of the way, old-timer!
Dale hauled back on the reins to bring the lead team to a halt before they ran over the old man. Lancaster cast an irritated look over his shoulder, and Luke knew it was because Dale had stopped the wagon without waiting for the colonel's order.
What do you want, old man?
I don't know who ye are or where ye be going, but I want you to take my grandson with ye.
The old man turned his head and nodded toward the shack, where a skinny boy about 12 years old stood on the leaning porch. He was barefoot and wore only a pair of ragged overalls.
I'm sorry, we can't do that.
But no, if he stays here, he'll starve, sure as shooting. The only chance he's got to live is going somewhere else, somewhere they have more food.
Well, then he's out of luck, old-timer, because it's like this all over the South. The Yankees have burned and looted and torn down until there's nothing left. A boy might as well stay here and starve instead of starving somewhere else.
No, you can't mean that. Oh, there's got to be someplace better. There's got to be a place where folks still have some hope.
If there is, we haven't seen it. I'm sorry, sir, but we have to be moving on. Now, if you will get out of our way...
Please! Please! You got supplies?
Not enough to share. Not even enough to last until we get where we're going. Now get out of...
Suddenly, a sizable chunk of the old man's head was blown away by a rifle ball. Tongues of flame spurted in the trees almost at the edge of the trail. Luke whipped his rifle to his shoulder and aimed at one of the muzzle flashes. A man in a dirty blue uniform and black forage cap staggered out from behind a tree and collapsed. Luke didn't have time to reload the rifle. He dropped it at his feet and yanked the revolver from his waistband as he used his other hand to shove Dale off the seat. He followed, diving after his friend. The bushwhackers seemed to be on the right side of the road. As the Confederates returned the fire, they hurriedly took cover behind the wagons. The saddle mounts bolted down the trail, but that was a problem to worry about later. Crouching behind the lead wagon, he tried to make his shots count, waiting for a glimpse of blue before he pulled the trigger. Fortunately, the Yankees cooperated. There was no telling where those Union troops were from, but they didn't seem to have much experience at the sort of hill fighting the Southerners did. Three more men fell to Luke's shots, and the heavy fire from his companion was taking a toll, too. The wagons, with their cargo of bullion, provided good cover. No bullets could penetrate those crates full of gold bars. Luke glanced at the other men. They were all on their feet. He couldn't tell if any were wounded, but they were all still in the fight, something that couldn't be said for the Yankees. The officer in charge of the ambush realized the same thing.
We'll overrun them!
That was just about the worst thing those Yankees could have done. As they burst out of the woods, they were met by a hail of bullets from the wagons. The first rank went down as lead tore into them, then the second, and the charge disintegrated into a chaotic milling around, turning the soldiers into sitting ducks. A few tried to flee back into the trees, but they were gunned down. An eerie silence fell as clouds of powder smoke drifted over the trail and around the wagons. Luke risked a look. It appeared all the Yankees were on the ground. If there had been enough of them, maybe they could have overrun the wagons and finished off the Confederates with their bayonets. But the attack had fallen short.
Check those men.
Stratton tucked away his pistol and drew a knife.
Josh and me will take care of it, Colonel.
Richards pulled out his own knife. Luke knew they intended to cut the throats of the Yankees who were only wounded. He didn't like the idea of killing defenseless men, but this was war, after all. Luke turned around. The boy who'd been on the porch had come onto the trail, falling to his knees beside the body of his grandfather. He was leaning forward over the corpse. Luke reloaded his pistol and his rifle, then walked over to the boy and rested a hand on his shoulder.
Come on, son. That won't do any good. Your gramps is gone. I'm sorry.
The Yankees came marching up a while ago. They told Grandpa that there would be some wagons coming along.
They said they've been chasing you for days and wanted him to stop y'all somehow. Grandpa didn't want to do it, but they said they'd lull us both and burned out our place if he didn't. He had to do it, mister. He had to.
I reckon he did. There's no shame in a man doing whatever he has to do in order to protect his family. You remember that, son.
But then they shot him anyway.
I think that was an accident. They were trying to shoot one of us.
He's still dead.
There was no denying that. Luke didn't even try to. He couldn't do anything for the boy except squeeze his shoulder again and leave him there to mourn his grandfather. He went back over to the wagons.
Anybody hurt in our bunch?
Yeah, Edgar got a nick on his arm, but Dale patching it up. The colonel's hat got a hole in it, too, so he came mighty close to shaking hands with the devil. But that's all.
We were lucky.
Very lucky. Maybe the fates are smiling on us for a change, huh?
I don't know if there are any more Yankees in this area, but if there are, they're bound to have heard this battle. We need to get moving again, quickly. Somebody move that old man's body out of the way.
We could bury him, Colonel.
There's no time for that. Now let's go. We'll all ride on the wagons until we catch up to our horses.
Luke thought it was likely the saddle mounts had stopped to graze somewhere along the trail. Once they were away from the sound of shots and the smell of powder smoke, they would have calmed down fairly quickly. The boy had gone back to the shack and disappeared inside. Luke and Remy picked up the old man's body and carried it carefully off the trail. They had just returned to the wagons and climbed on when the youngster emerged from the cabin carrying an old squirrel rifle.
You and your damned war! I hate all of you!
He started to lift the rifle. Potter's revolver suddenly streaked out.
You shot that boy!
He's about to point a rifle at me. Damned if I was gonna sit here and let him shoot me.
Luke hopped down from the wagon and walked over to pick up the rifle the boy had dropped. The youngster lay a couple of feet away, staring sightlessly at the sky. Luke tried not to look at those open, empty eyes. He checked the rifle.
I don't think this old relic would have even fired. You killed him for nothing, Potter.
I didn't have any way of knowing that, now did I?
That was true, Luke supposed. He threw the squirrel rifle aside. The boy and his grandfather lay dead on one side of the road, more than a dozen Yankees on the other. Once again, Luke and his companions were surrounded by senseless death. After all the things he had seen, all the things he had done, he wondered if by the time the war was finally over, he would have any soul left at all. The gold escort continued south, hoping the Yankees who'd ambushed them were the only ones on their trail. Luke thought it likely the women they'd encountered beside that creek had sent the soldiers after them. Each day, without an ambush or confrontation, the Confederates became more aware the Yankees had other things to deal with, like the collapse of the Confederacy. The atmosphere of gloom and despair hung over the landscape like actual clouds. The air smelled of smoke, rotting flesh, and defeat. It seemed to Luke like a month had passed since they left Richmond, but he knew it hadn't quite been 2 weeks.
We're getting close to Georgia now. Have to be.
I think you're right. What are you going to do once we get where we're going, Luke?
I guess that'll be up to the colonel. Maybe he has orders for what we're supposed to do next. If not, I guess I'll stay wherever the new capital is and try to do what I can to help. No point in trying to go back to Richmond, even if we could get there.
I got a feeling you're right about that.
The trail entered a long, straight stretch between two mostly bald knobs. Luke frowned at the hills, thinking it would be another good spot for an ambush. But when the trouble came, it popped up right in front of them, through sheer bad luck. A Union cavalry patrol came around a bend in the trail just beyond the knobs. The Yankees regarded anybody who wasn't wearing the blue as an enemy. Sunlight winked on steel as the officer in charge of the patrol whipped his saber from its scabbard. Just like that, the Confederates were in another fight, and there wasn't any good cover on either side of the road. All they could do was shoot it out. Duke brought his rifle to his shoulder, drew a bead on the officer leading the charge, and pressed the trigger. Their commanding officer's death didn't slow down the other cavalrymen. They kept moving forward, blazing away with pistols as they raced toward the wagons and the outriders. Colonel Lancaster tried to wheel his horse around and gallop back to the cover of the wagon. He jerked in the saddle as at least one bullet found him. A crimson stain bloomed on the colonel's shirt as he galloped past the lead wagon. Dale felt some pain, but he brought up his revolver and leveled at the charging Yankees. Another cavalryman fell. The back of the charge was broken. Only three Yankees remained mounted. They whirled their horses and fled. Luke turned to Dale and found his friend clutching a bloody left shoulder.
How bad is it?
Don't know, but it hurts like hell. I'll be all right. See about Remy and Edgar.
Luke twisted on the seat to look back at the other wagon. Remy was reloading and seemed to be all right. He glanced up and gave Luke a brief nod to signify as much. Edgar waved to indicate he was unharmed, too. Lancaster had galloped past both wagons before coming to a stop. Luke had a feeling the horse had been running blindly, that the colonel was no longer in control. He glanced back to where the horse had stopped. Lancaster was still mounted, sitting hunched over in the saddle. Casey trotted his horse back to check on the officer. He put a hand on Lancaster's shoulder and leaned over to take a closer look at him. Then he turned to the others.
Hey! The colonel shot to pieces!
Get him down from his horse, but be careful with him!
Casey frowned as if he didn't like the idea of Luke giving him orders. But he dismounted and reached up to take hold of Lancaster. Stratton got to them in time to swing down from his saddle and give Casey a hand.
Yeah.
They lowered Lancaster onto his back in the grass at the side of the trail. All the men gathered around him, even the wounded Dale Cardwell. Lancaster was still alive. His eyes were open, and his mouth moved like he was trying to say something. He couldn't get the words out, though. Nothing came from his mouth except trickles of blood at each corner. The colonel's shirt was so bloody it was hard to tell for sure, but it looked like the man had been hit at least three times. Clearly, the wounds were bad ones. Luke figured Lancaster had only minutes to live, if that long. He dropped to a knee beside him.
Colonel, can you hear me? Colonel!
From the look in his eyes, Lancaster wasn't aware of anything except the pain that filled him.
Colonel, listen to me. We need to know where we're going. Colonel, do you have a map? Can you tell me
He can't tell you nothing, Jensen. He's next thing to dead. Can't you see that? We're on our own now.
Don't say that just yet. We can't give up.
When Luke looked at the colonel again, he saw that Lancaster's eyes were starting to glaze over.
Well, he's sure enough dead now. And like I said, we're on our own. Question is, what are we gonna do?
Go check those Yankees and make sure they're all dead. Remy, patch up Dale's shoulder.
Oui.
Then we'll get moving. We can't afford to wait around. Three of those troopers got away. They'll go tell other Yankees what happened. We need to get off the trail and find a place to hole up for a while.
Luke glanced up. No one except Remy, who was tearing pieces off his shirt to bind up the wound in Dale's shoulder, had moved to do what he said.
Blast it! Get moving!
Well, hold on just a minute, Jensen. I don't recall anybody putting you in charge.
Somebody's got to take over. Or would you rather stand around and argue about it until a whole company of Yankee cavalry shows up?
All right, we'll do what you say. For now. But this ain't settled.
Let's put the colonel's body in one of the wagons.
Well, why not leave him where he lays?
Because I want to search him later and see if he's got any written orders or a map on him.
A short time later, all the business they needed to get done was done, and they were ready to move out. They followed the trail for another half mile until Luke spotted a narrow path leading off into a thick stretch of woods. He was driving the lead wagon, since Dale couldn't handle the team with a wounded arm.
Once we're all off the trail, get a branch and wipe away our tracks as far back as you can.
Remy waved a hand in acknowledgement of the order. The path was little more than a game trail. Trees and brush crowded in on the wagons from both sides. Branches clawed at the men. Several times the wagon sideboard scraped against tree trunks, and Luke worried they would get stuck. Finally, they broke out into a small clearing. It was big enough to turn the wagons around and go back out the way they had come in, but it would be a challenge.
Not only did I wipe away off tracks, but I pulled some brush in front of the opening as well. If any Yankees ride by, they might not even notice a gap big enough for the wagons.
That was good thinking. Let's get the colonel out of the wagon so I can check his pockets.
Robbing the dead?
Checking for a map or orders, like I said before.
Go right ahead. I ain't fond of handling dead men.
Neither was Luke, but he made himself do it. He hopped down from the wagon and walked back to where the body was put on the ground. He searched all Lancaster's pockets, but didn't find anything except a couple of blood-stained letters from the colonel's wife. He didn't read them, tucking them back into Lancaster's pocket. He didn't have any right to intrude on the colonel's private life. Since that search came up empty, Luke opened Lancaster's saddlebags next. He was luckier there, finding a leather dispatch case with a folded map inside. As the others gathered around, he spread the map on the ground and studied it. After a second, his finger poked a spot that had been circled.
Copperhead Mountain. That must be where we're going. There's probably a settlement nearby where the government's gonna set up. That's where we're going anyway.
I'm not so sure you're right about that, Jensen.
What are you talking about?
All you've got is a map. You don't know that this Copperhead Mountain place is where we're supposed to go.
It's the only thing in the colonel's belongings that has a destination marked. I think we all know that's what it means.
Maybe. But we don't have to go there now, do we?
Yeah, Lancaster's dead. The mission's over.
What makes you think that? Just because we've lost our commanding officer doesn't mean we don't still have our orders.
Orders from who? Jeff Davis? The president of a country that may not even exist by now? Hell, Richmond could have fallen the day after we left, for all we know.
Even if Richmond fell, the war's still going on. General Lee hasn't surrendered. The way those Yankees keep attacking us proves that.
Edgar's right about that. Our responsibilities still lie with the Confederacy.
But there's all that gold just sitting there.
It had happened even faster than Luke thought it would. The temptation of that fortune in gold bullion had been there all along, of course. Lancaster's presence and the men's habit of taking orders had held it in check. But Lancaster was gone, and all Potter, Stratton, Richards, and Casey could think of was how they could be rich men. All they had to do was forget about delivering the gold to Copperhead Mountain, take the wagons, and strike out on their own. If they headed west, they might be able to leave the war behind them. There had been battles between Union and Confederate forces out on the frontier, but not many. Luke glanced right and left. Remy, Dale, and Edgar stood with him, as he had known they would. They faced the other four men across a short distance. No guns were drawn, yet, but everyone was tense and ready for trouble.
Look, you know we're not going to let you take those wagons. That gold belongs to the Confederacy. If we do anything with it except deliver it where we're supposed to, we'll be thieves and traitors.
How can you betray a country that don't exist anymore?
You don't know that.
Hell, Jensen, you've got eyes. There's no way Richmond was able to hold out. The streets are probably full of Yankees by now. And if Lee hasn't surrendered yet, he's got Grant chasing him across Virginia. It's only a matter of time until what's left of the army is cornered. Lee's not going to fight to the death, and you know it. He'll surrender.
Forget it, Potter. From the looks of that map, we're not far from Copperhead Mountain. We can be there in another couple days, and that's where we're going with that gold.
That's your final word?
Next to him, Casey nervously licked his lips, anxious to grab for his gun. So were Richards and Stratton. From what Luke had seen of those men, they were probably faster on the draw than Dale and Edgar. He and Remy might be able to match them, but that wasn't good enough. If it came down to a fight, he and his friends would probably die. Some of the others would die too, but more than likely, one or two of them would survive. Those survivors would be very rich men. The ones who didn't make it would be dead, and that worry lurked in Wiley Potter's eyes. Potter didn't want to risk his own life to make somebody else rich.
Ah, the hell with it.
Wait a minute, Wiley, what do you mean?
I mean, I don't feel like dying over this.
The Confederacy don't need that gold. It ought to be ours.
A man can always get rich if he's smart enough, but not if he's dead.
Luke didn't relax and let his guard down. He didn't trust Potter, not for a second. It could be some sort of trick.
You'll go on to Copperhead Mountain with us?
I didn't say that. Look, we fought Yankees over and over again on the way down here. They're probably looking for us right now. Our luck's bound to run out sooner or later. I've had enough of this war, Jensen. I'm riding away. The rest of you do whatever you damn well please.
In other words, you're deserting.
You think I care what you call it? You can't betray a country that doesn't exist, and you can't desert from an army that's probably surrendered by now. All I know is I'm done with it.
Me too.
And me.
Casey still looked like he wanted to shoot somebody, but he gave a grudging nod.
Yeah, I'll go along with the others. I reckon being alive is the best thing.
So, Jensen, is it settled, or is it going to be a fight?
Luke glanced at his companions. Remy shrugged a little. Edgar gave him a tiny nod. Dale just looked like he was in pain from that wounded shoulder.
Go ahead and get out of here if that's what you want to do.
We're taking the horses.
Go ahead. We've got the colonel's horse. Remy can ride it. I'll handle one wagon and Edgar the other.
Sounds like you've got it all figured out. It'd be a real hero when you get to Copperhead Mountain with that gold. That is, until the Yankees take it away from you and you see what a waste it all was.
I'll know that I followed orders anyway.
Yeah, that'll buy you a lot. Come on. I want to put some distance behind us before any more bluebellies can catch up to us.
Wiley, are you sure about this?
I'm sure. We'll have other big chances later on. Stick with me, boys, and we'll all be rich sooner or later.
The others still didn't look happy about it, but they followed Potter's lead and rounded up. Potter took a small bag of supplies from one of the wagons and held it up to Luke, raising his eyebrows. Luke nodded for him to take it. The four men didn't follow the path back toward the road. They struck out across country, soon vanishing in the thick woods.
Deserters! Lousy deserters!
It may be worse than that. You don't trust them, do you, Luke?
Not one bit. We'll keep our eyes open in case they double back and make a try for the gold.
So now we gotta worry about the Yankees and those four? Things don't get no easier, do they?
Hardly ever.
They buried Colonel Lancaster's body in the woods and stayed hidden in the little clearing all night. Several times, Luke heard a lot of hoofbeats in the distance and thought it was likely the Yankees were hunting for them. None of the searchers came close to the wagons, though. Luke wondered if that was because they really hadn't gone very far from the site of the battle with the cavalrymen. The Yankees might have expected them to head on south as quickly as possible. Nor was there any sign of Potter, Richards, Stratton, and Casey. Luke hoped the four men really had lit a shuck for the frontier. It would certainly make things easier. By morning, Dale had developed a fever and lay stretched out under one of the wagons. They continued lying low and took turns wiping Dale's face with a wet cloth to keep him cool as he tossed and muttered. It was all they could do for him. The fever broke the next night. Dale was still weak, but a lot more coherent the morning after that. He was able to sit up and ride on the seat of the lead wagon next to Luke. Edgar handled the other wagon while Remy rode ahead to scout their route. He came back to report that the trail was clear.
Lots of tracks, though, and they're pretty recent. There's still plenty of Yankees in these parts. Might be better if we start traveling at night again.
That won't be easy since we don't know exactly how to get where we're going. We've got the colonel's map, though. Maybe we can figure it out.
Late that afternoon, they had to leave the road hurriedly to avoid a cavalry patrol. Luke and Edgar managed to pull the wagons behind a hill before the blue-clad troopers rode past, but it was close.
You're right. We'll travel at night the rest of the way, starting tonight. We'll stay here and let the horses rest a few hours, then try to put a few more miles behind us.
They made a cold supper from rations that had dwindled to almost nothing. For days, they had gotten by on about half the food they really needed. Luke's belly felt empty all the time. The trek wouldn't last much longer, he told himself, and then things would be better. Remy did a little more scouting while it was still light.
There's a river about a mile from here. It's shallow, and there's a good ford. We shouldn't have any trouble getting across.
And we can fill up our water barrels and canteens while we're at it.
That sounded like a good plan to Luke. When they had rested for a while and it was good and dark, they started the wagons rolling south again. The moon hadn't risen yet when they reached the river, but Luke saw stars reflected in its placid surface. Remy rode out in front of the wagon so the others could see how deep the water was. Luke figured it was only about a foot.
Bottom good and solid. Only problem is that the bank on the other side a little steep. It'll be a hard haul for the teams getting all that weight up to the top, but I reckon they can do it.
All right, let's go.
The big draft horses leaned into their harnesses. Water splashed around the wheels as the wagon began fording the river. Luke made the crossing without any problem and started up the grade on the far side as Edgar's wagon rolled out of the water behind him. Remy sat his horse to one side. Suddenly, what felt like a sledgehammer slammed into Luke low down on his back. The impact drove him forward. Dropping the reins, he fell to the side, landing with stunning force beside the front wheel. He had never felt such pain in his life. It swelled and burst into a fiery explosion that seemed as big and hot as the sun. As Luke lay there, he heard his friends getting slaughtered. They had been ambushed. The question was whether the bushwhackers were Yankees or those damn deserting curs. He got his answer a moment later when hoofbeats sounded close beside his head. Instinctively, he tried to jerk away from them, but his body wouldn't work anymore. All he could do was lie there and twitch.
I don't hear you giving any orders now, Jensen.
Wiley Potter. Luke recognized the voice, even though he couldn't respond to it. He thought his gun was still tucked in his waistband and tried to edge his hand toward it. The mud of the riverbank splattered in his face as the bullet tore into the ground beside his head.
You're beat, Jensen. You might as well admit it. The other three are dead, and you soon will be. And that gold's gone with us, just like it was supposed to all along.
You stupid idiot. Did you really think we were just gonna ride away and leave it?
Luke was hurting too much to force his thoughts into any coherent order. He shifted a little, and an even more terrible wave of pain moved through his body.
Your back's busted. That was a hell of a shot I made, if I do say so myself. You're gonna be a long time dying, Jensen, and I'm gonna sit right here on my horse and enjoy every minute of it.
So you go ahead and scream. It's music to my ears.
Wiley, we can't stay here too long. We need to take these wagons and get moving. Why don't you just put a bullet in his head and be done with it?
And what fun would that be? I'm with you, Wiley. I want to listen to Jensen scream while he's dying.
Luke's mind cleared abruptly. He understood what they'd been saying and forced himself to calm. He wasn't going to give them the satisfaction. But his resolve was short-lived. The deserters were enjoying Luke's torment. They weren't going to have much longer to indulge their sadistic glee. A darkness that had nothing to do with night was closing in around Luke, washing over his mind like a black tide. This is what dying feels like, he thought in a final moment of clarity.
He's dead.
Luke wasn't sure how long he lay there, awash in suffering, before he realized the pain meant he wasn't dead. He became aware of light striking his eyelids. He tried opening them and succeeded. Sunlight lay in a dappled pattern around him. Lying on his stomach on damp ground, his head was turned to the right, his left cheek pressed against the dirt. After a moment, he figured out the sun was shining down on him through some tree branches. Trying to make his brain work provided a welcome distraction from the pain. He tried to remember how he'd gotten there. At first, everything up until that moment was a blank slate in his mind, but slowly the details began to fill in. He remembered the gold, the journey from Richmond, the friends who had been with him. Then the ambush and Wiley Potter's sneering voice telling him the others were dead and he was dying. In fact, he recalled Potter saying he was dead. Potter had been wrong about that. Luke was too weak to move, but he sure wasn't dead. Not yet, anyway. Since Potter had been wrong about him, maybe the bushwhacker had been wrong about the others, too.
Remy, Dale, Edgar, can any of you hear me? Remy, no.
He had to get up and look for them. He might still be able to save them. The gold was gone. Luke knew that. Potter and the other deserters would have taken the wagons with them when they left him for dead, so Luke didn't waste time worrying about that. His only concerns were saving his own life and helping his friends if he could. He needed to get up and see how badly he was hurt.
One thing at a time.
First, he wanted to look around. He moved his hands enough to dig his fingers into the dirt and brace himself. Then, he lifted his head. The movement set off a fresh explosion of pain. He wanted to drop his head, close his eyes, and retreat back into the welcoming darkness. Instead, he forced his head from side to side in small, jerking motions. That's when he saw Dale lying on the ground a few yards away. The young man's face was unmarked, and his eyes were open, but flies were crawling around on them. He was dead, no doubt about it. His clothes were black with blood where he'd been shot. Remy and Edgar had fallen in the other direction. Edgar's face was a hideous ruin where several shots had struck him. But Luke recognized his friend's burly build. Remy was disfigured as well, with most of his jaw shot away. The flies were feasting on their spilled blood as well. Luke let his head fall. There was nothing he could do for his friends after all. Nothing he could do except save himself and maybe go after Potter and the others once the pain in his back got better. He didn't know how long he lay there, stretched out on the riverbank. The earth turned and the sun moved in the sky, and he was no longer in the shade. When the heat began to bother him, he tried to heave himself up to his hands and knees so he could crawl where it was cooler. The muscles in his arms and shoulders bunched, and the upper part of his body lifted slightly, but that was all. Luke pushed on his hands again to move upward, but was unable to move high enough. He tried to press against the ground with his knees and realized he couldn't feel his knees. He couldn't feel any part of his legs. Horror washed over him. His body seemed to end at his lower back, where the bullet had struck him and the pain was so bad. Below that, however, nothing hurt. His legs might as well not have been there, and for one sickening moment he believed they weren't. He thought Potter had sawed them off before leaving. Slowly, Luke moved his right hand next to his hip. He twisted his neck and looked along his body. He couldn't see very well, but caught enough of a glimpse to know that his right leg was still there. He slumped down. The effort had made his heart pound crazily and left him breathless. There was no dramatic moment, no stirring speech he made to pull himself back from the brink of despair. It was just that after a while he got so thirsty he thought he might as well try to get a drink from the river. He moved his left arm next to his left hip and cautiously looked under his arm to see if his left leg was still there. It was. He pushed and clawed at the ground in an effort to turn himself around. When he got far enough around, the steep slope worked against him, and before he knew what was happening, he was rolling down toward the water, his useless legs flopping loosely. Luke reached out and caught hold of a root growing from one of the trees on the bank and stopped himself at the edge of the water. He hung onto the root with one hand while he reached out with the other and cupped it in the stream. When he brought that hand to his mouth, the water he sucked out of his cupped palm was the sweetest he'd ever tasted. Thirst made him ignore the pain in his back. His movements grew frenzied as he drank. He missed sometimes and splashed water over his face. It felt good. Then his stomach lurched and he spewed up all the water he'd managed to guzzle down. The spasm made him remember about his back. The sickness faded after a few minutes. Luke lay there a little longer and started drinking again, slower. He kept it down. When his thirst wasn't so desperate, he twisted around and looked up at the top of the riverbank again. In his condition, the slope seemed impossible for him to climb. He would be better off just staying close to the water so he could get another drink later. Making that decision was all he could manage. Closing his eyes, he rested his head against the ground, content to lie there and wait for something. What he got wasn't good. Luke hadn't noticed the sun going behind the clouds, hadn't been aware the day was growing dark and ominous with the approach of a storm.
Go ahead. Rain on me, damn you. After everything that's already happened to me, how much worse can this be?
Unfortunately, a few minutes later, he realized his situation could get worse. When he looked along the banks, he saw how they were washed out in places. That was why the root he'd grabbed was sticking out of the ground. It meant the river had a tendency to rise when it rained. If the marks on the bank were right, the water would come up higher than the place where he was sprawled.
But how much will it have to rain before I'll be in danger?
He couldn't answer those questions, but it was a downpour, no doubt about that. All along the banks, miniature waterfalls were already forming as rain ran down to the river. Luke reached up the bank, dug his hand into the mud, and pulled. The ground was wet and slick, but he clawed at it stubbornly, grabbed another root, dug in with his elbows, and shoved. He got his body turned so he was facing up the bank again, instead of lying sideways on it. Even if he'd been able to use his legs, it would have been difficult to crawl up that muddy slope. With only his arms to pull himself along, it was sheer torture. The burning pain in his arms and shoulders dominated the misery of his back. Slowly, inch by agonizing inch, he pulled himself up the river bank. After what seemed like hours, when he was too exhausted to go on, he turned his head, looking under his arm, and realized he was only a couple of feet higher than when he'd started out. He looked back along his body as best he could. His feet were already in the water. The river had risen about a foot, and the current was running fast, which meant more and more water was coming down from upstream. Gritting his teeth, Luke tried to haul himself higher. He made another few inches, maybe half a foot, and his strength deserted him again.
You got me. I'm done for. Fought all I can fight. I'm sorry, Pa. Wish I could see you again. You and Ma and Janie and Kirby. But this is where it ends for me.
His head fell forward. Mud covered his face, clogged his nose. He fought free of it, his instincts refusing to let him die. The rain washed some of the muck from his eyes, and he was able to see the slender fingers reaching down and wrapping around the wrist of his outstretched right hand. Luke Jensen blinked in amazement as he rose up as best he could, carefully turned his head, and saw the face of the angel who had reached down from heaven to lift him from earth.
Damn it!
Confused, Luke blinked rainwater out of his eyes.
Come on, mister! You weigh too much for me to lift you by myself! You gotta help me some!
Understanding sunk slowly into Luke's brain. Despite the pretty face, it was no angel above him, but rather a flesh-and-blood girl. She wasn't wearing heavenly robes and didn't have wings, either. She was dressed in tattered overalls, a woolen shirt, and a battered old black hat with rainwater streaming from the brim.
Mister, can you hear me? The river's coming up. If we don't get you off this bank, you're gonna drown.
Can you get help?
No time. This old river comes up mighty quick when it rains like this. God dang it, I told Grandpa. I heard somebody yelling last night.
You better fetch him. Has he got a horse or a mule?
Yeah, but like I told you, there ain't enough time for that. Can't you push with your damned legs?
Luke couldn't, and he didn't have a chance to explain it. Just then, her feet slipped in the mud. She sat down hard as her legs went out from under her. She didn't slide very far. His head butted her in the stomach and stopped her. Her thighs rested on his shoulders. She put her hands on the ground and pushed herself away from him.
Dang, blast it! Don't you go getting any ideas, mister!
Ma'am, the only idea I have is not drowning. Let's try again.
The girl scrambled up and took hold of his wrist again. Luke used his other hand to grasp one of the tree roots and pulled. The combined effort was enough to break him free of the sticky mud. He slid upward almost a foot.
Hang on, let me get a hold of another root.
She waited until he had a good grip. And then both of them strained as they lifted his mostly dead weight. He wound up higher on the bank.
Here we go. We're getting it now.
They had made some progress, that was true. But Luke didn't know how much longer his strength would last. He was already drawing on reserves he hadn't known he possessed. Knowing there was a risk he would slide back down and lose all the ground he had gained, he reached up to grasp another root and pull himself higher with the girl's help. But the roots were about to run out, he saw with a sinking heart. The top of the bank was only about 6 feet above him, but it might as well have been 6 miles. The rest of the slope was nothing but slick mud.
You got to hang on here. I'll go find a branch or something I can reach down to you.
You can't hold my weight.
I'll figure out a way. It's our only chance.
All right.
With obvious reluctance, even though it was her idea, she let go of his wrist. She clambered up the bank. When she disappeared over the top, he felt a sharp pang of loss. There was a chance he would never see her again, and for some reason that bothered him as much as the possibility that he was about to die. He hung on to the route for dear life as the rain continued to pound down on him. The jagged end of a gnarled tree branch nearly poked him in the face. He looked up and saw the girl lying on top of the bank, extending the branch down toward him. All he could see of her was her head, arms, and shoulders.
Grab it! Pull yourself up!
Luke let go of the root with one hand and grabbed the branch.
I don't want to pull you over!
You won't! I've got it! Now climb, damn it!
Luke shifted his other hand to the branch. Its rough surface provided a pretty good grip. He looked up at the girl again and she gave him an encouraging nod. He didn't see how it was going to work, since she probably didn't weigh even 100 pounds soaking wet the way she was at the moment. But he tightened his hands and hauled hard on the branch. To his surprise, his body followed. Reaching hand over hand, he continued pulling himself up. When he glanced at the girl, he saw pain etched on her face. Supporting his weight was obviously painful. Not wanting to hurt her any longer, he summoned all his strength and energy and continued climbing up the branch. When he was finally close enough, she reached out and grabbed his shirt, pulling hard. He added his efforts and surged up and rolled over the top of the bank. He came to a stop on his back and had to push himself onto his side to keep the rainwater from filling his nose and mouth.
Careful, careful. After all that, we don't want you to drown now.
Luke blinked water out of his eyes and looked over at her. She still wore the soaked wool shirt, but she had taken off the overalls. The suspenders were tied around the trunk of a tree, while one of the legs was tied around her ankle. That was why she'd been hurting, he realized. The strain of his weight had gone through her whole body, passing through her hands on the branch to her shoulders, along her body, and through her ankle. When he turned his head, he saw the surface of the river racing along about 3 feet below the edge of the bank. He almost hadn't made it. This girl, whoever she was, had saved his life.
Thank you.
Don't thank me yet. The river could still get out of its banks.
Her hands were scraped raw from the rough bark. He saw as she sat up. Rain washed away the blood seeping from the wounds.
I'll fetch Grandpa in the wagon. He's pretty strong for an old fella. We ought to be able to lift you into the wagon. Your legs don't work at all, do they?
No. I can't even feel them. I was shot in the back.
Last night?
He nodded wearily.
And that was you I heard hollering. I wanted to come see, but Grandpa wouldn't let me. He said to let the damn Yanks and the damn fool Rebs shoot each other, that it weren't nothing to us either way.
Luke didn't know exactly what she meant, but it wasn't the time to discuss it. The girl untied the overalls from her leg and scrambled to her feet.
You could have the decency to close your eyes, seeing as how I ain't got no pants on and I saved your life and all.
Yes, ma'am. Could I ask you one more favor?
What's that?
Tell me your name.
Emily. Emily Sue Peabody.
You sound like a good Georgia girl, Emily Sue Peabody.
I am. Where are you from?
Missouri. My family has a farm up in the Ozarks.
And you must be a soldier in spite of what you're wearing. Otherwise, you wouldn't be so far away from home.
I was a soldier, but not anymore.
What's your name?
Luke Jensen.
Well, I'd say that I'm pleased to meet you, Mr. Jensen. But right now, that'd be a plumb lie. Now, don't you move. Come to think of it, I guess you won't, will you?
Not likely.
I'll be back quick as I can with the wagon. But take it kindly if you don't die in the meantime.
I'll try not to.
A new wave of exhaustion washed over him. His eyes closed.
Emily Sue Peabody.
It was a pretty name for a pretty girl. Thinking about her made the pain not quite so bad. The sound of wagon wheels brought Luke out of his stupor. Rain still fell, but it was definitely not pouring down as hard. The wheels stopped, and he heard somebody jump down from the wagon. Footsteps ran over to him.
You ain't dead, are you, Mr. Jensen?
I'm still here.
Emily bent down to look at him.
Good. He's still alive, Grandpa!
Hey, I'm glad to hear it. I'd hate to think you'd drag me out in this rain for nothing. My rheumatic don't like this damp weather at all.
Luke looked past Emily and saw a man with long white hair and a drooping white mustache coming toward them. The years had bent him some, but he was still fairly tall, and his shoulders were broad with strength. He reminded Luke of a thick-trunked old oak tree draped with moss.
Let's roll him onto his back so I can get a hold of him under his arms and drag him.
We can pick him up and carry him. I'll help you.
No, the other way will be easier.
He said he'd been shot in the back. Dragging him like that's liable to hurt him even worse.
Yeah, you might be right about that. All right, get on that side of him. I can take most of the weight, but you'll have to support some of it.
I've got it.
Emily moved to loop both arms around Luke's right arm with a secure grip. Her grandfather took Luke's left arm in the same fashion.
All right, you ready? Lift!
With effort, they straightened, hauling Luke upright for the first time since the night before.
Oh, this sure be easier if you could walk, mister. But since you can't...
Half dragging, half carrying him, they started toward the wagon, which Luke saw had a team of four raw-boned mules hitched to it. They looked like pretty sorry specimens, and the wagon wasn't much better. Every step the old man and Emily took sent pain jolting through him, but he gritted his teeth and didn't cry out.
Mister, you grab onto the sideboard and help hold yourself up whilst Emily puts the tailgate down. Up to it, girl.
Luke grasped the side of the wagon as tightly as he could. When Emily had the tailgate lowered, they helped him around to it and lowered him face down over the gate. Luke's weight kept him there while they lifted the lower half of his body and shoved him onto the wagon bed.
Oh, I can see why the bullet tore his shirt. Looks like the rain washed out most of the blood. Maybe did the same for the wound. If it didn't, he'd likely die of blood poisoning in a day or two.
Grandpa!
I'm just telling you the truth of it. I wager the fella's already thought of that his own self.
I have. I appreciate you trying to save my life anyway.
It was a girl's idea. I got no use for either side in this war. Haven't ever since I took my boy and my two grandsons.
Luke didn't consider himself a Confederate anymore. Not after the way he'd let down the cause by losing that gold. But it didn't really matter, since, as Emily's grandfather had mentioned, he expected to die from his wound in the next few days.
It might be a good idea if you was to climb up there with him and hold him as still as you can. It's gonna be a rough ride, and bumping around's just gonna hurt him worse.
You're right.
She climbed into the wagon bed and sat down next to Luke. Her grandfather got on the seat and took up the reins, slapping the mules with the lines until they lurched forward into a walk. The jarring motion sent fresh bursts of agony through Luke's body, just as the old-timer had predicted. Emily lay down beside him and put her arm around his shoulders, hanging on tightly to brace him against the wagon's rocking and bouncing. He couldn't help being aware of the warmth of her torso pressed to his. If he responded to it, he didn't know it, but somehow it comforted him anyway. Gradually, the pain eased a bit.